Vasquez beaten away by Buffon, and then Ronaldo! What a goal by Cristiano Ronaldo!
Messi to the near post! Messi to the net!
Mamma mia! Lionel!
Ramel Kyoto now. Here's a Honduran. He'll whip it in back to the far post. Elise! Albert Elise! La Pantanita! It's a Honduran connection!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. From the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Hey, a quick reminder here. Coming to Houston, Texas, July 20th. You're not going to want to miss this. Bayern Munich taking on Real Madrid. You get your tickets at Ticketmaster.com. Who's not going to want to go out to Energy Park and see two of the greatest teams historically in the world of football? Bayern Munich, the Bundesliga winners, and Real Madrid looking to build things again under the legendary Zinedine Zidane. Ticketmaster.com. It's Real Madrid, Bayern Munich. So if you enjoyed that Gold Cup atmosphere, why not get back out there again? Kings Court, I'll remind you tomorrow, El Batallón, the Dynamo Supporters Group, will be there. Kings Court has 13 monitors. It's 903 Hutchins, right down by the stadium. Get in there tomorrow. They got great British and Indian pub food. Go in, say hello to Jay. They're proud sponsors of this show, as is Hugh O'Connor's, 7620 Katy Freeway and the Marquee Entertainment Center. These are two great pubs for watching Women's World Cup, Gold Cup, Copa America, AFCON, you name it, Houston Dynamo. Those are the places to be. Kings Court and Hugh O'Connor's. All right, right now, great friend of the show. He's a man who's been packing his bag, maybe traveling as much as the greatest export of England, the Rolling Stones. He's Tom Marshall. He joins us now. Tom, where are you? You're in Arizona now, right?
Yeah, just not far away from what's it, State Farm Stadium. Obviously, Mexico against Haiti in a few hours. So, looking forward to it.
You know, this is an amazing job you have. Very interesting, too, following this team around. And you get to see and hear things others don't. What's something you saw and heard after the last game that you can enlighten our listeners to?
Yeah, I think that, Tata Martino is, obviously Mexico's great through on penalties. But I think Tata Martino is happy. He's happy with how this Mexican team is playing. And I think, there was, certainly in the press after the game, there was kind of a feeling that, Mexico had, had struggled. I mean, it would have been a disaster for Mexico to go out. But I think Martino, he's always looking for that bigger picture. And he likes the style of play. He likes the way that the players have taken it on board. I think he's happy. And obviously, going into this game against Haiti now, Haiti is, obviously it's a game Mexico should be heavily favourites to win.
We're talking with Tom Marshall of ESPN FC. Tom, speaking of Tata and how he handles the press, and I know it's still early days with him, but we did see how caustic it can get with Juan Carlos Osorio in the past, with Miguel Herrera, two very different individuals. Does this Mexican press, do you believe they respect Tata Martino more than those two prior managers?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I think it's because of Tata Martino's history. The fact that he's been a Barcelona manager, the fact he's managed the Argentine national team. But, it's interesting what you say, Glenn, because the way he's actually managing the press is so different. I mean, it's really black and white. I felt like Juan Carlos Osorio always wanted to talk to the journalists. He wanted to try and get across, why he was making certain decisions in games to help them understand it, because he was doing things that were kind of, a little bit out there, a little bit different. And Miguel Herrera is like one of those guys that, you can just phone him up and interview him, and he's fine with that. You know what I mean? So, Tata Martino is he gives minimal interviews. He doesn't like his players speaking to the press. Honestly, following this national team so far this summer, the access is, it's so limited. It's like, it's almost, I don't know, it's like you're following a group of rock stars. You know what I mean? You're trying to get a few words in with them, but it's very, very tough. So, he's got it on lockdown, basically, Tata Martino and the Federation. And, basically, it's just press conferences and then after games when you get the chance to speak to the players. So, very different than what it was.
How has it been in the mixed zone for you, you know, after the game where the players have to come out and do a little bit of interviews? I mean, who have you gotten to talk to, and who seems to be maybe stepping up vocally for the Mexican national team, El Tri, in the press?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's difficult. I mean, what Mexico do, and I mean, I don't know if people out there know that, but usually all the players have to walk past the mixed zone, and, you know, it's the player's choice whether they kind of talk to the media or not. What Mexico are doing these days is they pick five players, but only five players are kind of allowed to speak to the press. And a lot of the time, I'll give you one example, Uriel Antuna scored a hat-trick in the first game in Los Angeles against Cuba, and he didn't then speak to any of the journalists. So it's kind of, that's the frustrating part about, you know, covering the Mexican national team. But, you know, in terms of the people who've spoken up, I mean, Guillermo Ochoa and Andres Guardado are the absolute leaders. You know, they're so vocal. They complain about things when they feel they need to be complained about. You know, Ochoa, obviously the hero against Costa Rica, but, you know, Guardado was talking about the pitch. He said the playing surface needs to improve. And Martino as well. He's not been frightened to kind of, you know, have a couple of digs at the organisation about kind of, you know, the travel, the distances that this team has had to travel for this Gold Cup. You know, this is fifth time zone. I don't know what time it is. because Mexico's been travelling so much between different time zones, different climates. So there is a feeling that kind of, you know, Mexico is a team in this tournament that is, you know, has an average crowd of over 60,000, but yet do they get treated with, you know, do they get the right treatment from CONCACAF? I mean, it's an ongoing debate and it's all over the Mexican press, but there is that kind of friction sometimes when you do cover the team.
He's Tom Marshall, ESPN FC. Well, they certainly have the power because they are the ones that are filling the tills for CONCACAF, no question about it. I mean,
yeah.
The drawing power of Mexico, again, as we recognized here in Houston, is just, it's through the roof. So, you know, they play earlier in the week. Mexico and Costa Rica played this past, what was it, Saturday, I think? Yeah. Saturday night they play. So we got a pretty quick turnaround here, three games. Do you anticipate many changes from Tata in this tournament at this point?
I mean, Tata basically, he doesn't want to change things up. I mean, his idea is that, you know, that he wants to keep the base of the team and that's going to be the one that plays the whole tournament. But, you know, there are a couple of issues. Andres Guardado has got a little bit of an injury concern that he picked up in the second game against Canada. So that's something to look out for. Perhaps Carlos Rodriguez, the Monterrey midfielder, who for me has been the standout player for this Mexican national team in 2019, just a player with, you know, just very, very exciting player in terms of his technical ability, what he brings, you know, the chances he creates for others. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him come in. Gerson Dos Santos as well had a bit of a tight hamstring after the game against Costa Rica. And then I think Antuna, you know, maybe he'll drop to the bench for Roberto Alvarado. And the other possible changes, you know, if Hector Moreno is going to come in. You know, he got a few minutes against Costa Rica, scored a penalty. But, you know, is now the time, semi-final, where Moreno steps in? And, you know, who would, you know, would that, would Salcedo, or would it be Araujo who misses out? So I'm expecting maximum three changes from the team that got past Costa Rica.
Yeah, and you mentioned Rodriguez. He did come on for Guardado in the 84th minute against Costa Rica. Hey, can we switch gears here real quick to, before we do, we have to respect a bit out of what Haiti's been doing. Three comeback wins. Does Haiti pose some problems tonight for Mexico? Because, you know, you get in these tournaments, teams that go on a run, confidence just snowballs, it compounds. It is a country that has done something they've never done before. Do you get the sense that you know, they're not content, or do you get the sense that maybe this is the type of team that in a game like this can kind of just say, you know, we've achieved this and maybe a little bit's lost, or they're going to go at it with Mexico?
No, I think they're going to go at it. I mean, I think Haiti have been the story of the tournament. I mean, you look at the kind of, you know, the poverty index. I think in the Americas, it's the poorest country. And you saw the, you know, the videos going around social media of what it meant to the Haitian people for Haiti to get past Canada and reach the semi-final. I mean, people dancing in the streets. I mean, when people kind of criticise the Gold Cup, I mean, sometimes we have to look look at those kind of images, and it does mean a lot for the so-called lesser countries. So, but yeah, I mean, in terms of actually on the field, Haiti have got the style to cause Mexico problems. I mean, it's the exact style that Mexico over the last, you know, last few years, last 10 years, has struggled with. It's that team that sits back, that is really good on the transition, physical, athletic, fast, you know, and a lot of team spirit. We saw that against Canada. So, yeah, 100%. I think that the problem for Haiti and the big question mark is going to be, can they handle the occasion? It's one thing to play against Canada when the Mexican fans are kind of filing in. It's another thing to play in front of 60,000, you know, all in an away stadium. I mean, some of these players, you go through the list of the Haitian players, you know, some of them are playing in third division England. Some of them don't have a club. Some are playing in Haiti. Some are playing third division in the United States. I mean, this is a team, when you look at it individually, it should be nowhere near Mexico. But if Mexico do kind of underestimate them, then you actually just never know. Martinica managed to, you know, they only lost 3-2 against Mexico. Costa Rica have picked up the draw. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if they do handle it. If they do handle it, I think it'll be a decent game.
9 o'clock Central Time, Mexico, Haiti, and the Gold Cup. Tom, as always, we thank you for all your great insight. Thank you very much for taking out the time in Phoenix, Arizona. Enjoy the game. Look forward to your coverage of it post-match.
Thanks a lot, Glenn. Speak soon.
All right. The one and only Tom Marshall of ESPN FC. Q57 is the home of your Houston Dynamo. Join Eddie Robinson, Cindy Bourbano, and myself tomorrow. The Dynamo are proud to be on the Cube. And the Dynamo in action tomorrow night against the New York Red Bulls. If you're not watching it at home, get out to the stadium, HoustonDynamo.com. We'll take a break.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Aquí está Fuller desde el punto penal. ¡México! ¡México ha ganado en penales! ¡Welcome, Phoenix! ¡Phoenix dice, vengan para acá que hay semifinal mexicana! ¡Sí, señor!
All right, we keep things rolling here tonight. Time to talk a little bit of the Houston Dynamo. Before we do, reminder, tomorrow, Kings Court, that's the place to be before the Dynamo game. 903 Hutchins in the shadows of BBVA Compass Stadium. They got 13 monitors. People have been watching the World Cup there, the Copa America, the Gold Cup there. Get down to Kings Court for all your soccer-watching desires. They got great British and Indian pub food, too. Kings Court, Houston, TX.com. And your other watching spot is Hugh O'Connor's. 7620 Katy Freeway, that's in the Markey Entertainment Center. 18 TVs, big screen, home of Houston LFC, the Liverpool supporters group. It's amazing that place is even standing after Liverpool won the Champions League. So it is a wonderful spot, though. Go in there, beautiful woods and photos, old black and white photos of the Guinness Brewery in Ireland. That's Hugh O'Connor's. All right, time now to bring in my partner, who'll be doing duty tomorrow on the Cube as the analyst on the Dynamo Red Bulls match, and you can catch it on the Cube pregame show as well. Eddie Robinson, Eddie, thanks for coming on the program.
Thanks for having me, Glenn.
All right, let's start off. I don't want to talk about that giant that giant tomahawk steak I saw you post on Instagram. I don't know what type of an animal you got that off of, but that thing probably could have fed a family for a year.
Oh, it did. It fed four adults and one child. And they're still left there. That sucker weighed about 4 pounds.
Yeah, so how did you cook that, by the way?
Reverse sear. You cook it in the oven until you get just to rare. Then you put it on a really, really hot skillet. I used a cast iron over the broiler on my grill, about 800 degrees, with some bacon fat. Seared both sides to get it to about 115 degrees, which is just on the edge of rare, medium rare. Nice carving, very juicy. Oh, so much flavor.
Yeah, I saw that. That made me hungry when I saw that. All right, let's switch gears to the Houston Dynamo. Coming off the road trip, as we know, did not get any results in this road trip. They had to do it without guys like Albert Delisle, Minor Figueroa, and a lot of the guys away from the Gold Cup. So they will get those guys back tomorrow night. What are you expecting tomorrow night when they take on the New York Red Bulls, who, by the way, is getting results themselves?
Yeah, man, I don't know what to expect from this Dynamo team. It started so well, and, you know, just to put it in context, they have played half of their home games for the season, and we're barely halfway through the entire season, so they've had a very home-heavy front end of their schedule, but these last few weeks have been difficult, and, you know, I'm not one for excuses, but the fact that MLS would schedule this Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday during the Gold Cup, knowing that teams are going to be up without some very, very influential players, to me is a joke. It's ridiculous. We talk about our league and how we want it to be taken seriously and how we're trying to get it to be one of the best in the world, but these little things, they've got to change. Now, that being said, the Dynamo went to Foxborough and seemingly were in control of the game. Had a 1-0 lead. And as the Dynamo seemed to do, they gave up a late goal and they lose 2-1. So I think that's 3 points that the Dynamo really could have used. Now, all this being said, and all of these things that haven't been going the Dynamo's way, they're still in a playoff position. So now they're getting Albert Delisle back. You expect Marmon Otis to start playing 90 minutes again. You expect Romelu Kyoto to be at full fitness. You expect, as these midweek games start to taper off a little bit, DeMarcus Beasley will be playing 90 minutes. When you get your big guns back, I think that the Dynamo have ever an opportunity to just separate themselves from the teams outside of the playoff spots. I think they did enough with enough games in hand prior to the Gold Cup that even though they lost a few of these games, that they're still in good position and they can still turn this around and finish this last half of the season on a very high note.
Dynamo now are in seventh in the Western Conference, around 24 points. Minnesota United, and guess who's above them now? The San Jose Earthquakes, who won the California Clásico. They are going to have to win on the road. They're 1-6 on the road now. We did see better road performances in Seattle and Los Angeles when they had the full squad. But, I mean, the reality is 11 players can't do it. You have to be 16, 17 deep in this league, right?
Yeah, of course, and that's what we were led to believe in the offseason, that the Dynamo did what they needed to do to have basically two 11s, and there wouldn't be much drop-off between the two when it came to all the competitions they would be participating in this year in their quest to repeat as U.S. Open Cup champions. We know that's not going to happen now, so I think all the focus has to be now on making sure that they make the playoffs. We know we've seen it for 22 years now, that all you have to do is make the playoffs and anything can happen. You peak at the right time and you can turn an average season into a fantastic season with a championship. And hopefully that's what Wilmer Cabrera and his staff are aiming for now, that it starts tomorrow night against New York Red Bull with a very solid professional performance, good defensively, create some chances, finish some chances, and get 3 points.
So when I look below the Dynamo, you got Real Salt Lake, Portland, Vancouver, Colorado, and Sporting. And you got to think a Peter Vermees team's going to make a push. We know what's going on in Portland with them. They've made some signings. They are now playing a ton of games at home. You got Vancouver. You got Colorado, who actually has had a little bit of an upspin with Connor Casey as their manager. And then you got RSL and Mike Petke. So I guess this is the way the league was designed to make it competitive, but there's only 5 points between the last place team in the league and the seventh place team, the Dynamo, who are tied with Minnesota. So all bets are off now. Anything can happen. We know in these playoffs, 7 out of 12 make it. So you have to make it to have a decent season. I mean, no question, right?
Yeah, of course. And Kali, you mentioned those teams. I mean, look, Colorado just beat LAFC, who most pundits and soccer media types are saying are nearly unbeatable, that they could be the best team in MLS history, which I absolutely don't agree with. I don't even know if I put them in top five, but that's a conversation for another day. Anything can happen. You said it. You have to control what you can control, and that's your own performance. You win your games. You cannot get to a point where you're relying on other teams to get results to help you. You have to control what you can control. And that starts tomorrow night. You have to win this game.
Tomorrow night is the halfway point for the Dynamo. That'll be their 17th game of the year. There's teams that have played 20 already now. Now, they're going to take on the New York Red Bulls, and I watched their Chicago game, Eddie, and I'm not sure if you've seen it yet or you're going to watch it tonight, but the New York Red Bulls, in many categories, were outplayed by the Chicago Fire and Bastian Schweinsteiger and C.J. Sapong. But at the end of the day, what they were, in transition, very dangerous, in transition, very deadly, and that's how they got a 3-1 win, and they're a pretty together squad, it seems, despite the fact that they lost Tyler Adams to the Bundesliga and that BWP, Bradley Wright Phillips, finally got back on the field for them in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at Bradley Wright Phillips' scoring record over the last, 5 years. Only person that's come anywhere near it is Chris Wondolowski, who's the all-time leading goal scorer in Major League Soccer. I mean, the guy just scores goals for fun. And then when you look at, though, I think climate, and this is one of the biggest things that people talk about in Major League Soccer, is the distance traveled and the crazy, crazy fluctuation in climate from different city to different city. Yes, it's hot in New York. Yes, New Yorkers are going to say, oh, man, it's hot here during the summer. It is. But anyone that's been in Houston for the last 2 weeks knows when you walk outside, and I was outside this morning with my other job, the assistant coach for Houston Dash, it was like a sauna. And teams from the Northeast, from the Northwest, that affects them. So I think one of the most important things for the Houston Dynamo tomorrow night is make sure that you get through the first 30 minutes without making any mistakes, because the Red Bull are going to come. They're going to try to win this game. They want to win. After that first 30 minutes, I think that's when the Red Bull will start to fade, physically, mentally, and emotionally. And that's when the Dynamo really need to strike. They need to get a couple goals right before halftime. They need to go in maybe 2-0, 2-0, 3-1, whatever it is. And I think mentally that Red Bull will have a hard time coming back. If the Dynamo allow New York Red Bull to be in this game come halftime, I think it's anybody's game. But I think if the Dynamo can get themselves into a lead, a comfortable lead. And when everybody says 2-0 is the most dangerous score in soccer, and I guess there's a lot of history to say that it is, but I think the Dynamo can get through halftime and have themselves a lead. I think that should be 3 points. But if they allow the Red Bull to hang around, Bradley Wright Phillips can do anything at any time and take 2 points away from the Dynamo, if not three. So I'm not going to say this is 100% a must win. I think it's about 80%. A must-win for the Dynamo, because they do have games in hand. These are the games that they need to take 3 points.
And I'm sure Bradley Wright, Phil, I'm not sure, you know, he's only come back. He came on in the second half. He may not be a starter. Brian White has filled in for him wonderfully with 5 goals and 2 assists. Nobody really knows who he is outside of New York. Daniel Royer's chipped in with 4. Kaku's got 3. They have 16 guys that have scored goals on this team. But I think for me, one of the big storylines, Eddie, going into this game is a couple of things. We did see what we looked at in the last game in New England as the Romel Kyoto we know a little bit more. Penetrating, taking people on, making things happen. I want to see if Albert Dolis is going to come back from this Gold Cup like a man possessed to take the Dynamo on his back and carry them. Now, we do know he's a young guy. But he was a very frustrated man in that Gold Cup. So for me, one of the storylines is, how does Albert Dolis come back, and does he lead the Dynamo like he did at home all year long?
Yeah, and I think for Albert Dolis, it's not just pride for your club, but it's playing for your future. He's young, and we've all heard about the interest in him overseas, but it's coming from clubs in Turkey. Rumors of Celtic in Scotland. Is that where you want to be? Or do you want to play in Spain or England or France or Germany, one of the higher leagues? You've got half a season left to really make your mark and to really make teams stand up and make their ears perk up. This is not just a motivation to help your team win games, but it's motivation that should be there to help solidify your future in Europe, as he wanted to do. So I think there are more than a handful of reasons why it would make sense for Albert Elise to play, as you just said, as a man possessed, create opportunities for his teammates, score goals, and own the right side of the field in every single game that he plays. Because when he's playing his best, there's not a left back in the league that can handle him. There just isn't. So we will see what Albert Elise comes back from the Gold Cup tomorrow night.
Yeah, I think that is one of the big storylines. Eddie, as always, thank you. I'll see you down at the stadium tomorrow night, fans. You can watch it on the Cube. Better yet, get out to the game. There's Independence fireworks after. It's going to be a big night. HoustonDynamo.com for your tickets. Eddie, as always, thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me, Glenn. I'll see you tomorrow, buddy.
All right, see you tomorrow. Have a good night. That's Eddie Robinson. By the way, Advantage BMW. I've driven one for years. I've leased, I've owned. I love the drive of a BMW. The other thing I love is the customer service at BMW, and I'm talking Advantage BMW Midtown. So get down to Advantage BMW Midtown. They got you covered with sales, service, and finance. Advantage BMW Midtown. My friends Philip and Justin, get down there, see them. They love soccer. They love football. And we have an upcoming live show coming from there on July 20th prior to the Bayern Munich-Real Madrid game. And by the way, tickets for Bayern Munich and Real Madrid, Ticketmaster.com.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm from the ESPN 97.5 studios. Here's Glenn Davis.
El último penal para Chile. Si anota Chile, está en semis. La orden del árbitro viene Alexis. ¡Gol!
Welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Hey, don't forget, Houston Soccer Community Dinner is coming up on August 16th. It features Manchester United, Celtic, and Scotland legend Brian McClair. Now, why should you go? You should go because you're a football soccer fan. It's going to be a great night with a legendary player, but it's all open to you, the Houston soccer community. All differing supporters groups are going to come, former owners of pro teams, ex-players will be in attendance, movers and shakers in the soccer community. And all of this to raise funds and awareness for pediatric cancer at Texas Children's. Now, the event benefits two 501c charities, the Curing Children's Cancer Fund, and my friend Kevin Klein and the Snowdrop Foundation. Three-course meal, raffle for two tickets and accommodations to a Premier League game, signed Liverpool ball from the 2019 squad that won this year's Champions League, and more. I mean, every year, the memorabilia that goes up for sale at this and auction is unbelievable. Manchester United signed gear like crazy, Barcelona signed jersey as well, all kinds of amazing stuff. So it's the best $110 you could spend. Get over to Facebook Soccer Matters. All the information on the event there and where you can sign up at Eventbrite or by contacting the legendary Tom Clare. It's all there. I hope to see you there. And if you're someone who's been a friend of mine throughout the years in the soccer community, I would love to see the surprise of you coming to this event. And by the way, it's a three-course meal as well. So for $110, you can't go wrong. We'd love to get a couple of corporations picking up tables as well. All right, so speaking of Brian McClair, let's give you a little taste of a guy that in one of the years was the first guy coming back to Manchester United to score over 20 goals since George Best did in 1967 and 68. Brian McClair was the first signing for Sir Alex Ferguson. Here's my conversation with him earlier today. Brian, thank you very much, number one, for coming to Houston, and number two, for doing this interview.
Well, hopefully both the interview and the event goes very well. I'm very pleased to with the accolade you've afforded me there. Oh, don't let anyone down.
I don't think you're gonna. But what I want to do here is really talk a lot about your career and influences in life. So let's start with you're growing up in Scotland. as a youth player. Kind of take us through what it was like growing up in such a soccer-rich country, and then kind of get into some of your influences as a youth.
Well, I mean, my earliest memories were outside, kicking a ball about against the wall. I suppose you always look at your environment when you cast your mind back to where you end up as I did as a professional sportsman in soccer. And a lot of it is down to just what there is to do. Now, where I lived originally, it was in just at the edge of the town, so there was no other kids around, and I was just sent outside to play because it was safe. And there was the ball. I can't remember who was the person who brought me the ball. And then what became my best friend for a long time was a wall. And I just kicked the ball against the wall literally all day long, really.
Brian McClair joining us. By the way, go to Facebook Soccer Matters. The event information is at the very top of the page. All right, so, you know, you ultimately get yourself to Celtic, very identifiable. We have Celtic supporters groups here in Houston. What was it like to sign a first contract for Celtic?
Oh, it was, I'd had a bit of a very good couple of months just before that at Motherwell, where I was a part-time player because I was studying at university full-time. And I'd had a really good January, scoring a few goals against then not only Glasgow Celtic but Glasgow Rangers. It probably gave me some kind of profile at that particular time. And it was really a surprise, actually, because I had been in Mexico in 1983 for the Under-19 World Cup with Scotland. And when we got back, I got a phone call from the Motherwell manager at the time, who was called Jock Wallace. And in his indomitable fashion, he told me that he'd sold me and that I had to come and see him right away at Fir Park in Motherwell, I went over and he said, "You have to go. Billy McNeil is waiting for you at Celtic Park. Get yourself in there and make sure you sign." So I kind of was left with very little option, really, but Celtic was the club that... because of the Lisbon Lions, I had seen a highlights package of the 1967 European Cup win when I was at primary school, and I was about 5 or 6, and that was the thing that made me fall in love with the game. So I wasn't going to turn that opportunity down. I felt at the time that they'd offered me a 4-year contract, that I could always go back to university, because the likelihood would be, Alan, is that my body would decay quicker than my brain. However, I've never managed to get back to university yet.
Well, based on looking at your career and everybody knowing about your career, I think you made a pretty good career choice, I would think, Brian. When at Celtic, was there any specific person that really influenced you a lot there before we begin to talk Manchester United?
Well, I was again in a great position where I had some really good experienced professionals at all the clubs that I'd been at. Aston Villa for years as an apprentice, so not played in any first team games for them. I had some really good professionals who would give me some good advice at Motherwell, and also gave me a kick in the backside when I needed it. And that was the same when I was at Celtic. Particularly Danny McGrain, who was the captain of Celtic and was a tremendous football player and a very very good man. And then I had Tommy Burns, who was a real character and full of joy and love for not only Celtic Football Club but for football in general. And his infectious nature was a huge influence on me in that period of time.
He's Brian McClair. He's going to be our guest speaker here in Houston for the Houston Soccer Community dinner that we're holding. It's annual. It's for pediatric cancer research. It'll benefit 2501C Charities, the Curing Children's Cancer Fund. And the Snowdrop Foundation. So it's going to be a big night. Going to be a lot of people there. You can sign up at Facebook Soccer Matters. Go right there. It's at the top of the page. All the information is there. It's a three-course meal. It's the best $110 you're going to spend, and you're going to hear some amazing stories from Brian. Take my listeners, Brian, into the whole divide, because this is something that's a little bit foreign to people here in the United States, is at that time the divide between Celtic and Rangers and how it kind of bordered on the religious.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the time when I was playing for Celtic, Rangers didn't sign any Catholics. You know, that was their policy, which was something that Jock Steiner, who was a famous manager of Celtic, used very much to his advantage during the 60s and 70s when he was managing Celtic. He was a non-Catholic himself, but he used to tell his scouts that he saw two players and they couldn't quite choose which one, so they were on each side of the divide then to sign the Protestant, because Rangers wouldn't sign the Catholic and would allow them to take the time to see whether this other player was good enough. But that also changed quite quickly after that. Rangers changed the policy, which was the right thing to do, and also helped him become very successful as a club, winning the 9 titles in a row in the 80s and 90s.
Brian, what's your fondest memory at Celtic?
My fondest memory was the very first day that I walked in as a Celtic player to Celtic Park.
Can you remember it now? I mean, like, are you visualizing it right now?
I remember just arriving at the stadium. Slightly different looking stadium than it is now, but there was a, you felt that you know, even though I might have only been there for one day, that you were going to be part of the fabric and history of a wonderful football club. I ended up being there for 4 years and had four great seasons as a player there.
Brian McClair joining us. He will be the guest speaker at the Houston Soccer Community Dinner. Facebook Soccer Matters. You're not going to want to miss this night. Hey, by the way, Brian, in the summers when I was a kid growing up and the New York Cosmos were in full flight, the Celtic would come over and play in tournaments, and then I, as a youth, would play against the Celtic boys because they'd kind of come over as well to a town called Kearney that had a very big Scottish influence.
Yeah,
and that's where actually my youth coach came from, Kearney, New Jersey, and so I have a lot of great respect for that man coming into my life and for Scotland. So let's move on to Manchester United. You now go to Manchester United. I mean, this is another incredible move. And what's that like when you get to United?
Well, Alex Ferguson sold me a dream. He said to me that his intention was to rebuild a sleeping giant of a football club. And did I want to be part of it? And yes, I very did want to be part of it, although it was a difficult decision to decide to leave Glasgow Celtic to go to Manchester. But it was all down to his persuasive charms.
So season one, you bang in 24 goals for Sir Alex and Manchester United. It's the first time somebody's had over 20 goals since George Best in 67 and 68. That's something magical. I mean, tell me about that first season and all the goals you're scoring and how you scored these goals.
Yeah, well, it was great to have that as an achievement. However, the whole idea was, and the whole idea why I wanted to be a football player and a professional football player was to win things. As I mean, to win things as a group, as being part of a team. Although we finished second that year, we were never in contention to threaten Liverpool, who became first division champions that year. But it was great to have done so well. But you could see slowly but surely that how Alex Ferguson was putting his mark and his stamp on the football club and on the playing and on the coaching staff. Although it would take another few years before we were successfully win a trophy.
Brian McClair joining us, former Celtic, Manchester United, Scotland. So you've been able, because you have worked for Sir Alex Ferguson on the managerial side as well in player development. You were one of his players. What really stands out about him? I'm reading the book about him and his management style and how he relates things. You've seen him change through your lens. I mean, what are the things about the man that makes him just so unique and so successful?
Well, I think you just maybe put your finger on the most important thing, that he adapted to change and he embraced change, whatever way it was, whether that was the formation of the Premier League or the Champions League. The increase in the size of a squad, and not only the playing squad, but also the support staff squad. And he found a way of managing all of those people. I think he was hard, but I think he was fair. And probably, for me, his most... consistent and successful characteristic was that he made decisions. He made decisions, and most of them, well, the huge majority of them, he got correct, whether that was recruiting players or selling players or picking a team to win a particular game. He told me once that he just tried to pick a team that he thought would win the game, not consider any external issues with either with the players or with anyone else or any emotional factors. And he turned out to be pretty good at that.
Yeah, no question at all. By the way, you might not have won the trophy the first year, but you did ultimately win 14 of them and Premier League titles. I mean, this was an amazing time period for you, and how involved in this you were and how big of a piece you were. You've also played with some amazing players. Can you give us a word on a few of the greats that we all know, guys like Roy Keane, Mark Hughes, Eric Cantona? Can we get a word on a couple of those guys?
I think that the thing about all of them was that I think that Alex Ferguson signed players that he thought were lucky or that were winners. Now, all of those players had been successful in various guises and went on to become hugely successful in the sense of winning trophies, not only at Manchester United, but other players as well. So I think he was looking for players that were winners. And also, he had a great story in that he felt he had to be a special player with the ability to play soccer, but also to be a very special person who could deal with playing at Old Trafford and everything that surrounded being a Manchester United player, which you were represented of every minute that you were there, whether you were playing or you were not playing, or whether you were involved as a Manchester United employee in the soccer side of it. So I think the main part of it would say that he always looked at himself as a winner. He wanted to win. He wanted to win at everything, not just football games, anything that he did, playing cards, golf. He wanted to win and win any way he could.
Brian McClair joining us. Brian, we'll ask you one more before you go, because I'm very interested in this, because, you know, not all footballers do this, but you spent from 2006 to 2015 the director of the Youth Academy at Manchester United. This is remarkable. Talk to me about how that all developed and how your mentality might have had to change once you're a player into the management side of it, and then working and directing and putting programs together for young players that, you know, you're expected to move through to a first team.
Well, the first part of it is you're having, you feel very fortunate to be asked, and when you've been asked by Alex Ferguson to take up such position, you know that he's putting his trust and his faith in you. So that gave me a great boost. But then probably the most, well, in the sense of I had a team that was a very good and very successful prior to me becoming a candidate manager. And really they made my management role fairly easy because we were such a good and tight team that mainly had been put together by Sir Alex Ferguson. So I was just another part of that. And we all worked very well together. We had had Manchester United deep within us. A lot of them had played. A lot of them had been involved in Manchester United for long, long periods of time. They all loved children. They all loved coaching. And all we all wanted to do was to try and help players, young people, become decent adults and hopefully get a career in the game. And when you look at the amount of people that did do that, it's a huge achievement that we never made anyone a player. They all made themselves players, but we think that we created a real good environment, a good platform for them to thrive in over the long period of time that some of them were there.
He's former Manchester United, Celtic, Scotland striker Brian McClair. Brian, listen, we can't tell you how excited we are to host you down here in Houston. We'll show you some of the sights. We can't wait to hear you at the banquet, and I think you're going to enjoy meeting a lot of great people down here. So, as always, we thank you very much for coming on the program tonight, and we look forward to your arrival in August.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so that does it tonight. There's a little bit of a taste of Brian McClair, and we can't wait till he gets to Houston. That is the Houston Soccer Community Dinner on August 16th. The very next day, August 17th, the Dynamo play Colorado. That's the professional players' reunion of all former professional soccer players that played on pro teams in Houston in various leagues. So a big thanks to Brian, a big thanks to Andrew Carlson, Victor Ariza, Eddie Robinson, Tom Marshall, all of our guests tonight on the program, and most importantly, you, the listener, you who downloads it on the podcast, thank you for supporting this show throughout the years. Facebook Soccer Matters, Twitter Glenn Davis Sock, Instagram Glenn Davis Sock, and don't forget, Soccer Matters.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.